Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Reveille, reveille, donks.
Look at us now, tip to tip. This is our life. This is our passion. That's the spirit we bring to this show.
I'm Luke Thomas.
I'm Brian Campbell.
This is Morning Combat.
It is Friday, October 16th, 2020. And it is time, ladies and gentlemen, donks and donkettes, for Morning Combat. Hi, everyone. My name is Luke Thomas. I am one half of your hosting duo. I am joined by the gentleman on the other side of the screen. He is the Brendan Conlin to my Tommy Reardon. It's the one and only Brian Campbell. What's up, BC?
I don't know. Just sitting here wearing all this fat merch, fired up after arguably, Luke, arguably the greatest week in Morning Combat history. I mean, we are not only giving it to the people with the fist, we're turning it once we get inside. What a time to be alive. What a time to wear MK merch. I'm ready. I'm fired up. Can you feel the things that I'm putting out into the ether sphere?
Not really. You also missed the importance of my intro there, because if you'll note, Tommy Reardon gets choked out by Brendan Conlin at the end of Warrior, and I gave you the Brendan Conlin role. I feel like that's a very honorable thing for me to do.
Yes, and just like Tommy Reardon, spoiler alert, you definitely will tap once I get in there. One of these days, Luke. One of these days, brother, okay?
Although I was honorably discharged from the Marine Corps, I did not desert my unit. Okay, we have a lot to get to on today's show. We're going to give you previews of the weekend, huge weekend in fights. Ortega, Korean Zombie, it's here. Lomachenko, Lopez, it's here. We have to recap last night's Bellator and a couple other bits of news and notes. And we're going to do tip to tip. We're going to do dead wrong. We're going to do a review of Warrior, which was the homework that I fucked up in sending out, but we're going to talk about it nevertheless. First things first, give the video a thumbs up. Hit that subscribe button. Let's move units, everybody. We need your help to do that. Always appreciate when you do. Of course, if you want some of this sweet merch, easy, BC sporting on his cabeza, and I'm wearing some as well, you can go to store.show.com. There you have it. You can get hats, shirts, beanies, tumblers, mugs,
condoms, whatever.
Condoms,
you need. Whatever
the
you
whole
need for a Saturday
bit.
Night, all right?
The whole bit. You can get everything you need at store.show.com. And of course, if you'd like to try Showtime and all their wonderful programming, you can go to showtime.com. You can get a 30-day free trial. If you like it, keep it. If not, go pound sand. But BC, before we get the show started, though, we should let folks know you and I sat down with interim UFC lightweight champion Justin Gaethje. Now, there's a lot to this. I think this interview is going to come out today after the show. We wanted to give you a sneak peek because to say, well, BC, what would you say about it? He was in a mood.
He was in a mood to put his life at risk and not care twice about it, Luke. I love that shit, all right?
So have a gander at this little sneak preview of the interview.
All right, I like the respect that you've shown for him in all of the pre-build. You're not, you know, teammates in a sense. You're part of the same management team, and Ali Abdelaziz, manager of the Stars. Gun to your head, who's Ali cheering for in this fight? Come on, Justin. Yeah. Be honest with me.
I'm here to ruin Ali's day. I'm here to ruin Dana White's day. I'm here to ruin Daniel Cormier's day. I'm here to ruin Javier Mendez's day. I'm here to ruin Khabib Nurmagomedov's day. Fuck all those guys. They already got, I don't know what their plan is, but they said they got a plan ahead. I'm going to fuck it up. They're going to change my nickname from the highlight to 2020.
Did you see BC nodding the whole time like Biggie was spitting bars over there on the Brooklyn's corner?
Did he just send the manager of the Stars, the president of UFC, one half of Ariel in DC to hell, Luke? I think he just did, right?
Yeah, he seemed to have done that. Now, maybe that was just, you know, a spur of the moment thing, but I don't know. That seemed to have caught his attention. I thought he was going to give, you know, the question that you had asked was in somewhat fun spirits. I thought he would play along. No, he went the other direction. he went the other direction completely. I was like, whoa. So that will be out a little bit later today, and there's that times 1,000. It's going to be good stuff, so be on the lookout for it.
And just a quick reminder, you know, we warned you for weeks that the MK Ultra expansion was coming this week. Not only your three live shows, not only a failed attempt at a live chat for Luke Thomas and a dissected, but we got interviews that if you haven't caught them already on YouTube, please do. Corey Sanhagen drops by. Joaquin Buckley fresh off the knockout herd around the world. And then, of course, ahead of Saturday's big-time lightweight unification in boxing, Teofimo Lopez Jr. and the great Vasily Lomachenko, who, Luke, he may or may not just added himself to a list of great fighters over the last 12 months, which includes Tyson Fury, Mike Perry, Jermell Charlo, to send me to hell on my own damn podcast. What's going on here, Luke?
Your interview style lends itself to hell sending. It's funny enough, I got sent to hell by John Jones, which was certainly more of a public event. But you consistently get sent to hell way more than I do.
Not fair. Not fair.
All right. We have a lot to get to, a lot to preview. Without further ado, let's get this party started. Topic number one, this was some of the news and notes. It happened a little bit earlier in the week, but we would be wrong if we did not comment on it, BC. So is Conor fighting Dustin? It seems like he might be. They appear to have agreed to a January 23rd date. How do we know that? Both gentlemen took to social media to say they agreed to the date. And what's kind of interesting was we knew previously, by Conor's own admission, that he wanted to fight in November or December. UFC seems very adamant that they did not want it there. They wanted it for January. We'll talk about that in just a second. His only condition, Conor's, was that, I don't even know if it's a make-or-break condition, but he seemed to have wanted it in AT&T Stadium in Arlington, Texas. Okay, BC, do you believe it? Is the fight on? Are we actually going to see a rematch in the first quarter of 2020?
Dude, I was as skeptical as anyone as we were sort of talking about this episode by episode in the last 2-3 weeks. Good God, I feel it now. I believe this is real. And I was a little nervous when, you know, in the back and forth, the public negotiation, when Conor said, I'll do it, but it has to be in 2020. Then Dana talked to, I don't know, who was it? Brett talked to somebody and said, we'll do it, but it's got to be January 23rd. To see Conor come right back on Twitter and say, yep, I'm in, let's do it. And then try to take a little bit of that power back, Luke, by saying, call up my good friend Jerry Jones. Let's make it big. I believe we're going to see it. Not only do I believe we're going to see it, Luke, did that man Conor McGregor just say that I'm going to win my February 1st, 2021 COVID bet? Are we going to pack this dome for this, you know, non-title super fight? Because I'm here for this, bro.
Yeah, I don't think we're going to pack that dome for that stadium. Now, because of the stadium size with social distancing, they might be able to get a sizable amount in there. But the weird part about the whole thing with the fans is, it's like, one, if they do the social distancing thing, it's not going to look full. It's not like you can just pack them all at the inner bowl and leave the rest of it up top empty. You can't do that, number one. Number two, it's like, how much can you really charge people under those circumstances to make up the difference in what you would ordinarily get for, let's say, a packed T-Mobile arena? Can you really defray the costs in the same way? I'm skeptical of that, but neither here nor there. I'll say this. One, do I think it happens? Probably. Do I think it happens in AT&T Stadium? I do not. Wouldn't rule it out, but I don't think that's the likeliest scenario.
Why? Why, Luke? Why?
Conor has essentially bent to every demand, and the UFC might want to do it that way, but in the end, there are a lot of... I mean, here's the thing. Do you want to bank on COVID? Because I don't. And what I mean by that is we're getting much better at treating it. It's not nearly as bad as it was in terms of how we understand it relative to March. I think everyone would agree with that. There was a recent article in the New York Times by one of their chief health reporters, and this guy was sounding the alarm bells in January about this thing. He has been very... sort of down in the dumps about what has happened. And even he put out an article recently saying, you know, there are real reasons for optimism in 2021. And he also doesn't think that the flu season is necessarily going to be all that bad. I'm just pointing out, though, like, look at what's happening in Europe, dude. They're having another outbreak, which I did not see coming. I mean, they're having a worse outbreak per capita than we had over the summer.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
I don't know what's going to happen with COVID. Maybe it'll be by the time January comes around, things will be better. But do you really want to bank on that for your biggest star to be like, oh, maybe things will be so under control? We don't have to worry about this even with social distancing. I just feel like in the end, it's just going to end up at the apex because it's safe, it's reliable, it's known, it's controllable. All the other stuff is just way too many variables. So that's the first thing I'd say.
I'd have to guess that we're not going to find out the venue until very late. And I think the good news is, and the reason why we're not going to find out late, is we have, you know, some guinea pigs. And that's, you know, the Halloween night boxing pay-per-view on Showtime when Leo Santa Cruz challenges Gervonta Davis inside of the Alamo Dome coming up. And then we also have that, I believe, December 5th at AT&T Stadium PBC pay-per-view on Fox. Yes. With Danny Garcia and Errol Spence. Those seem to be, you know, testing grounds that when they're going to put, what, 10, 15,000, how many people out there? Yep. I think that'll tell us something.
But we know you can do it. Like, if you want to put fans in there, depending how you do it and how many, it can be done. It's just, does the UFC want to do it where it, like, it looks like a half or even a quarter empty arena? Maybe they want to do that. But it's kind of funny. Like, UFC was the first to get back in the COVID era in terms of major sports, but they've been the last to introduce fans. I don't think that's an accident. I mean, even Bellator had fans before UFC by going to Paris over the past weekend. Or a weekend ago. So I don't know. There's something kind of interesting about that, about the UFC still not crossing that threshold. I'm not saying it's not possible, but you understand that. It could very well be possible.
Sure.
It's just, do you want to bet on this fucking disease? It just seems like it's such a wild card.
And I don't know if Conor's out on the idea of a fight island of the Middle East, but, you know, maybe it has to go there because of the extra money kicked in to allow UFC to, you know, make the proper amount they would on a Conor fight. I'm not sure, but the great news, the best news of all, you've got public statements from the two guys who matter, Conor and Poirier. And let's forget about COVID. Let's forget about really bad analysis from Max Kellerman on First Take. Good God, you sent me that clip. Him calling Poirier the old BJJ master. Forget about that. Let's focus on what matters. This rematch is freaking awesome. Not just in an larger pound for pound sense between two, you know, top 15 fighters in the world, not just in the sense of this deep and loaded division for the title picture, but most importantly, whether you love him or hate him, this is Conor McGregor getting back in line, getting back into the system, so to speak. I know he says this is the build-up to Manny. I don't know. I don't care. This fight matters. Whoever wins this is going to have the greatest chance, you would think, outside of GSP parachuting in to get Khabib if he beats Justin Gaethje, and maybe Justin Gaethje will send me to hell for just saying that right there. But that's the most important part of this. Look, this fight is awesome. I mean, this is a blockbuster fight, title or not. I can't wait.
Yeah, I mean, it's everything that the Cerrone fight wasn't. I mean, on paper, the Cerrone fight was supposed to be something kind of interesting. Striker versus striker. They're not going to cut weight at 170. But in the end, we all know what the story was. Cerrone came in there just incredibly worn down. Fifth fight in less than a calendar year against just nothing but buzzsaws from beginning to end. And yeah, he won a couple of them. He lost a couple of them heading into it. But still, my God, it was just a way too aggressive a schedule. And especially to end on that, it did not last very long. So it was fine for what it was, but it just didn't tell you a whole lot. This will tell you a whole lot. A guy like Dustin Poirier is in the prime of his career. There's some miles on him, too, but not a calamitous amount. Not the kind that makes you think he can't win this one. You're right. I like Kellerman a lot. I don't know what the hell he was doing. But
I love me some Max Kellerman. Please.
He's great. He's great. He fucked that up royally. But, you know, Dustin is well-rounded. He is capable of surprise. I think that's probably something you could say, although chances are it's going to be, you know, exercised on the feet. I think the only thing I would say, BC, it's they do this with Conor McGregor every time. Oh, he's getting all of these carefully selected fights, and he's avoiding this and he's avoiding that. And there was something to be said for it, but they never understood the larger picture, which is, yeah, he might be getting just the right matchups at just the right time, but he's eventually going to hit a space where there's no going back, and you're going to have to fight all the buzzsaws. There's no choice anymore. Coming back after that long layoff, they gave him something of a, you know, given what conditions Cerrone was in, something of a soft landing. But, you know, listen, the arm floaters in the pool are off. The bumpers in the bowling lane, they ain't there anymore. This is straight no chase, and I love it.
I love it. Final thought on this for me is this, Luke. I just can't wait to see what happens from this element. You and I both don't believe that Conor has a chance to get in Dustin's head the same way he did a long time ago, which obviously, along with the fact that it was at a smaller weight class and Poirier had a tough cut, that was a big part of it. I felt that he dominated Dustin's brain and sort of set him up for that knockout the same way that Conor did to Eddie Alvarez years later. But with that said, Conor still might have the style that's kryptonite to Dustin, no matter how great Poirier has evolved, and that's going to be really fun to see if that's still the case.
Right, exactly. How much of it the first time were mind games and combination of talent differential? With this time, both of them are kind of elder statesmen in the sport, where they have their own charities, and they try to carry themselves a certain way, and they're kind of past that whole vinegar and piss part. But, you know, when it comes time to sling the dogs, it's going to be no problem. How much of it actually was just the guy was just better because of he's better and the style and blah, blah, blah. That difference will be great to see. All right. Let's set it up here, BC. This weekend, the UFC is on Fight Island. UFC Fight Island 6, a featherweight main event. And I cannot wait. The Korean Zombie is back. Brian Ortega, no hair, is back. He shaved his head prior to today's weigh-ins. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, he is bald.
Let me time you out and say, Luke, should we be, is that a bad sign? Because I can make all the Samson Old Testament jokes I want, but is that a bad sign to see a guy with such beautiful locks almost look like being forced to shave it off to make weight?
Wait, did he shave it off because he had to make weight, or was it symbolic? That's
the online speculation, and the reason why there's speculation is if you look at the pictures of him without the hair on the scale, there's patches, which kind of show you that it was maybe a panic move.
Maybe. I tend to think it was probably more planned, but I guess we'll have to see. Yes, to the extent that it was premeditated, it might mean something, but if it was just to get, you know, the fight on, I don't know what that means other than itself. But okay, the fight is incredibly interesting. And we've talked about the major storylines, but when they finally say, are you ready? Are you ready? And they square up, what are you expecting? What do you think we will see from these two? What kind of fight will it be?
You know, I do believe it's going to be all action, and not just because that's what Korean Zombie does, but because I just feel like Brian Ortega's in love with his chin and his evolved striking. Now, we're going to find out pretty soon in this fight, and I think the strongest advice strategically for Ortega, especially since he's got to answer the questions of the layoff and the possibility of cage rust. And oh, by the way, he's making this 2-year return in the middle of a pandemic, being dropped into Abu Dhabi, fighting at a weird time. I mean, there's a lot of elements here, but if you told me he's going to commit to the old school plan of jiu-jitsu, and I'm not saying it's easy to take Korean Zombie down and have your way with him on the ground. Look, his takedown defense is a big part of his danger and his ability to keep things on the feet. I would like his chances better. Luke, is my fear overblown that because Ortega knows how great his chin is and because, you know, he knows how great of a man he is, that he's gonna go into hell here? And if he goes into hell with the Zombie, I don't like his chances given the intangibles in this moment.
Wait a second. We've got a thing here. According to Brett Okamoto, and then I guess reproduced by BT Sport, Ortega is donating his hair to charity supporting children undergoing chemotherapy. So does that make you believe that it was planned or no?
I'm not trying to be cynical, but it doesn't necessarily make me believe it was planned, no.
All right. Well, in terms of what you're going to get here, I do believe that like what you're going to see from Brian early, and this is all very speculative, but my hunch is that what you're going to see is a lot of stick and move. I'm going to show you all my new tricks. They're going to keep me safe, probably calf kicking, getting out of the way, good footwork, good sort of cage generalship. But eventually, I think Korean Zombie is going to land on him. And the question is what happens when he does, and probably to a degree he will. I mean, one of the things that's always been a problem in his fights, remember, he came back to beat somebody like Clay Guida. He has had to dig himself out of problems a number of times. He gets hit a lot. At least historically, he gets hit a lot. I think he's going to show you a lot of new things that's not the case. But once the fists start flying and landing, does he resort to what he used to be? And a couple of factors stand out for me. Number one, this is partly a function of what Max Holloway did to him. So these numbers are not fully representative of the totality of his career. But he lands about 4 strikes per minute. He absorbs almost 8. You know, that is not great. That is somebody who gets hit way too much. Even if you take the Max fight out, the differential would still be probably in the negative, or to bare minimum, just too close for comfort. You want somebody to have a 2-to-1 differential in the positive, not the negative. The other part that stands out to me, BC, is the 16% takedown accuracy. Not great with takedowns. However, the X factor here is, do we think Brian Ortega could pull guard? Yes, I do. I actually really believe that. He's got one of those guards where once he gets to that position, he's good at controlling posture, off-balancing you, setting up attacks to get you to react to what he's doing. He's not laying there and passively waiting for you to punch to then wrap up an overhook and see if the ref will save him. He's attacking, or sweeping, or off-balancing, just doing something so you can't get going. As good as Korean Zombie's passing and ground and pound is, somebody like Ortega, you think in theory, has the ability to neutralize some of that. So I'm going to be paying attention to the defensive footwork, the defensive sensibilities early. Does he get baited if he gets tagged? And then to what extent does he pull guard? Because I don't think he's going to be able to take down the Korean Zombie.
I really want to... I know you hate predictions and picks, and nobody really knows, obviously, Luke. You think the weatherman knows? You know what I'm saying? You don't need a weatherman to tell you which way the wind blows.
It's a little bit different than the picking the weather, but okay.
All right. If I was a betting man, I'm steering clear of Ortega in this fight. I just think there's too many variables against him, and we can add the hair and maybe the weight cut with that without really knowing, obviously. You never really know what's going on. But the 2 years off, going into a potential 5-round fight with an absolute savage, I like, you know, looking back at Zombie's recent run. We've talked about it before. 4 fights since coming back from the military leave. He was winning that Yair fight until literally the last second. He's 3-1, but he has rolled through people. He's incredibly confident. He's evolved his game. And again, I just have those fears that you get Ortega into some shit, and he's going to start becoming the Ortega from L.A., you know what I mean? And we're going to have a war, and this is going to be Zombie's fight. Zombie might shred this guy. He might do it. And I think Brian Ortega is a beautiful man with the hair. I'd love to hear what happened on the set with Halle Berry, maybe him and I one day on a after-hours podcast. But I'm going big on the TKZ right here, and you can do with that information what you please, Luke, okay?
Yeah, I mean, predictions are for suckers, but it's just hard to –
Really?
It's not hard to pick Ortega. It's just I don't know what the hell we're going to get. 2 years away from the game, and not just that, 2 years away after a hellacious beating and then injuries. Part of the reason why it took 2 years to get back was because he got injured along the way. Now, not to the extent that it's utterly debilitating, but enough where he just couldn't ever get going again. So I'm sure he's added skills. I'm sure he's fully recovered, and I expect him to perform up to a very reasonable level and potentially even win. I don't think that that's crazy at all. It's just, dude, Korean Zombie is, I mean, what he did to Edgar. I mean, they have similar opponents. As good as Ortega did against Edgar, I would say Zombie did better, number one. Although that one uppercut from Ortega lifting Edgar off of his feet was just magic. Okay, that's pretty good. But the other part is they fought Moicano, and, you know, Moicano gave Ortega everything he could handle. Moicano could do nothing to the Koreans. Set him to another weight class is what he did. I mean, it's pretty remarkable. His boxing is so crisp. His power is legit. His fight IQ has just, I mean, he's been transformed. So for those reasons, I think momentum is real. I'm going to side with him. But, you know, listen, Brian Ortega back in the mix at featherweight is not a problem. It's
a great
thing to have.
I got one question for you. Dana said the winner of this fight We'll get a title shot, and I agree with that. I'm fine with that. I really am. Do you think Volkanovski fights again before fighting the winner of this, and who would that be? Am I missing somebody off the top of my head?
I don't know who that would be. It would have to be...
It's not going
to
be Max.
It would have to be one of the... Are we going to do that shit again? Really? We're going to make a guy win three times?
We're not going to do that shit. No. I'm not here for that.
Yeah.
Even though I thought Max won, well, he won the second one.
I understand, but you just can't do that to a guy. Not right away, anyway. So, yeah, we'll see what happens there. But I suspect the winner of this will fight Volkanovski next. All right. So now we go to the big boxing fight of the weekend. Excuse me. We'll do it in a second. I'm wrong. We'll do Bellator here, and then we'll end on the boxing here for our big topics. Bellator 249 last night. Mohegan Sun. What do you want to say, BC? We had Chris Cyborg against Arlene Blenko. Kind of ugly in the end. I mean, she was a minus 1,200 favorite, Cyborg was, and I'm honestly wondering if those odds were conservative. Blenko looked to be in tremendous physical condition relative to previous physique she had shown up with, even in this weight class. She was ready for the opportunities from a physically training standpoint, but from a skills standpoint, holy smokes, she was totally overmatched, BC. What's your major takeaway from it?
Yeah, so here's the deal. Like the betting oddsmen were proven right in this regard, but I still think we saw a very impressive performance from Chris Cyborg from this aspect. Not just that it's amazingly the first submission win of her legendary 15-year career, but Luke, you know, it's something you talk about in the build to this. I had noticed this in Cyborg and in throughout her UFC run. She's a lot more patient, certainly, than the old school Strikeforce days of just throw herself into traffic and land big shots on you. But even deeper than the efficiency that she's showing with age at 35, to see how great she was on the ground with her wrestling, with her takedowns, with her work in the standing clinch, and the ease in which she would transition to full mount. Now, look, I mean, Arlene Blenko is a former pro boxer. Her calling card is her ability to throw hands. I'm not saying she, you know, Cyborg's in there with next level world class, but I'm seeing a Cyborg who is in incredible shape, not stopping her hard work and her evolution. Look, a storyline that will keep coming up each time she fights because she's going to be so heavily favored is, when is she going to show up old, blah, blah, blah. I'm not sure it's going to happen anytime soon, and I think that's the greatest victory that Cyborg had on Thursday night, was that we're seeing wrestling, we're seeing jiu-jitsu from her, we're seeing everything. She's a legend. She's great. I wish we did get the Amanda Nunes rematch. I'm not really sure who Bellator can really give her. Now, Julia Budd, I would be down for a rematch. She had been the champion for a long time. She comes back with a big win, maybe against Kat Zingano, which they were talking about. I'd be fine with that. But even though there was an argument from the Cyborg Coker side ahead of this fight that Bellator might actually have the deepest 145 division in the world, which you got to put a little asterisk there because there's not many actual 145 divisions in this world. The UFC is putting out mostly blown up bantamweights. I just don't know who Cyborg's going to get competition from, and maybe this is what leads her to some one-offs in boxing, but absolutely dominant. Shout out to her. And hey, Arlene Blenko, a little bit sneaky. Sorry, I had to say it. It's Friday. We can say stuff like that. A little bit sneaky, Luke.
Yep, you got to sexualize all of the people that we cover for a living. That's fun. Well, I can't really add much to what you're saying, other than the only thing I would add is, and I don't want it to get lost, it's not like Cyborg, from her own personal preparation standpoint, is taking her foot off the gas. She's still coming in tremendous condition. You know, submitting Arlene Blenko, I'm sure that's something she probably could have done a few years ago, so I don't know how much it says about the growth of her game. But she's at least trying new things. She does train with Cobrinha and Andre Galvan, which is like, you know, two titans of the jiu-jitsu world, which I think that stands, it tells you about her commitment to her craft. And as long as she's doing that and she's staying in reasonably good condition physically, which obviously she is, this is a spot she should occupy for a long time. The only thing that kills me is like, dude, media, I know you're there and everyone wants to ask about Amanda Nunes. In what fucking universe is that fight going to happen? Because it's not the one that we live in. Now, maybe you believe in the multiverse, and there's another universe where these guys will be willing to co-promote. And Scott Coker is, of course, but, you know, Dana White famously will never co-promote, never has, never will. So why are we bothering with this idea that, like, the Amanda Nunes fight is something we can will into existence? It's like a more professionalized version of that online thing where people were rallying for Mark Hunt about 7 or 8 years ago, which also ended up doing jack shit. Please stop. It's not a thing that can happen. The boxing thing literally can, because when she signed with Bellator, they put a carve out in her career that would allow her to do that. That is literally far more likely than anything related to Amanda Nunes. So please, media, will you stop wasting everyone's time? Thank you. Thank you in advance.
Are you in on our friend Scott Coker's, you know, hard stance that there is no argument? I know he says this maybe for marketing purposes, but he believes Cyborg's the greatest women's fighter of all time, and a quick loss to Amanda Nunes in his mind didn't change that. Maybe there's a debate there. Do you have any thoughts on that debate?
Is there a debate there, BC?
Is that what you're telling me? So thank you. I love you, Scott Coker. There's not a debate. All right, thank you.
Yeah, there's. I'll say this for Cyborg, which is I think gets lost a little bit. The longevity of her run is extraordinary. I mean, on national TV as a pioneer, right, fighting Gina Carano, and here we are in 2020, more than, 10 plus years later, whatever it is, and she's still out here just bodying these fools. I mean, that is remarkable. She's not number one, but how do I explain this? She's number two, and number three is so distant. It's not even remotely
close.
Look,
we never bring members of our family on the show, but Reggie Jackson just opened my office door that was locked, and he's yelling. So shout out to Reggie Jackson there. All right.
Look at Reggie. Why doesn't Reggie have a collar, you fucking ape?
Dude, he's an indoor cat. This ain't the hard streets of D.C., all right? He's fine. Leave him alone. We got
BC, the finger-painting gorilla, and his favorite cat.
Tough break on Patricky Pitbull. He had, I don't know, some ear issue. He got pulled from
He had labyrinthitis. I'd never even heard of that shit.
Tough break on Saad Awad's ball bag. It wouldn't be a Bellator card unless somebody gets kicked in the dick there. But I do want to shout out a couple things on Bellator. You know, we know that October 29th card is going to be a banger when you're going to get Musasi.
Hold on. I'll pitch it right back to you. But Leandro Ego getting a great win over Ricky Bandejas. He looked awesome.
Oh, shout out. That was good. That was a sneaky good fight on paper. And he dominated. Good. Dude, he made Bandejas look like CM Punk on the ground. I was very shocked by that. And Tough break for Bandejas, who... Yeah?
The one thing I'd say, BC, sorry to cut you off, is, you know, we talk about what's the best division in UFC, 135 or 155, and you can have a debate. Dude, the 135-pound division in Bellator is easily their best division, and for no small part to guys like Leandro Ego. That's it. That's all I have to say.
And you know, this is where I'm going to give Bellator legit credit. You know, it's one thing to sign the old names that you know from UFC to get attention. They are building from the bottom up the right way. I mean, they just signed Magomedov, who, you know, his claim to fame was that he fought Peter Yan twice, and he's the only guy to beat him, and that fight was an absolute war. Shout out to Kaposa for turning me onto that and showing me some incredible videos and GIFs there on the interwebs. But, you know, that's just another name you're adding to the depth of what we have here. So I love what they're doing in those divisions. I love the announcement, right, that the Featherweight Grand Prix will continue on two separate cards in November. Obviously, as I was mentioning, that October 29th card with Musasi and Lima is, you know, just about as good as it gets in all of MMA for that main event, something you said last night on CBS Sports HQ. Shout out to the family there. But did you see that tweet from Fabricio Verdum? He put out a picture of him and Fedor basically kind of saying, without saying, that rematch is going to happen. Would you get the feels for that if Bellator trotted them out?
Honestly, Fedor and Verdum are sort of at the same uber late stage portions of their careers. There actually is a little bit of symmetry there. So for that reason, I would not mind it, I guess. What about you?
It's old guy slop. Give it to me. You know what I mean? You could bring a boomerang.
Why did I even bother asking? That's hilarious.
I want to see it. It'll be gross. Yeah, I want to see it, though. Okay, let's do it, please. I'm not done with Fedor, but I'm also, I don't want to see Fedor against Bedor either, right? I'm sorry. Was it Bader Fedor or Fedor Bedor? I always get that confused. Kind of like, I can't say air hair. Is it ear hair? Air hair?
Coco, the finger-painting gorilla, why are you derailing the show? One last note here on the prelim card. I was like, oh, pay attention to Kyle Crutchmer, this, you know, international class wrestler and from Oklahoma State. He lost to this dude, Kemren Lachinov. I'm not sure how you pronounce it. He was literally getting punched in the face by Crutchmer and then screaming at him, that's all you have. It actually ended up on the Instagram account for SportsCenter. And this dude, Lachinov, whatever it is, he might be pretty good. He's 10-2 at 170 pounds. Dude, beating Crutchmer is no small feat. I was like, okay, all right, you got my attention with that.
And we're going to find out on Monday if you have seen that shit. We're also going to find out on Monday from Thursday night's card, my guy, right? Aviv Ghazali, is that his name? The 19-year-old from Israel. Another spectacular submission, 4-0 in Bellator, even though you no-sell the shit out of this guy every time I bring up his name. Hey, Aviv, I'm here for you, bro, okay? Let's do that shit.
I just no-sell the apartheid state of Israel. That's what I no-sell.
You separate? Could you separate, please? Please, could you separate?
Can I? I mean, the dude comes out with, like, the Israeli flag and everything, and it's on his shorts. It's like I'll separate it when you separate it. But, okay, if you don't, then I'm going to call it what it is. It's an apartheid state. Okay. Last but not least, BC, we have a major...
There ain't war crimes in Doha these days? Come on.
Oh, yeah, but everyone says that. I mean, you know, Middle East is full of just absolute, you know, total dictatorships left and right, but no one has any trouble noting that. It's not, you know, there's a bit of a difference
World
there.
Cup.
Okay.
World Cup crimes, too. Yes, a lot of corruption.
Oh, you can't,
there.
Dude, the World Cup cannot be watched in 2022. The amount of slave labor that was put to use to make those stadiums usable is a complete crime against humanity, and I mean that sincerely. All right, the Middle East is fucked up. All right, so let's move on to this last topic of our big four. Vasily Lomachenko, Teofimo Lopez, it is finally here, BC. I was looking around at various folks' previews to see what they'd say. BC, now, I try to be as educated on the fight science as I can be. I'm a student now. I will be a student forever. I will never be an expert. I am not an expert, but I try to at least be literate on matters as best I can. And everyone I've seen who appears to be more literate than me says Lomachenko is going to wipe the floor with him. Now, would that be a surprise, given everything we've seen from Lomachenko against other fighters? Less so at 135, but in general, no, it would not. However, I have to tell you, I don't see that. Lomachenko winning, I think, is the right call. Winning with this kind of, you know, overwhelming ease, why do people say this? What am I... seeing that a lot of other folks are not seeing when it comes to Teofimo Lopez?
In terms of his chances in this fight?
In terms of, like, why is it when I look at this guy, I see somebody who is skilled, who makes quick reads, who is big for the weight class, who is heavy-handed, who is athletic, who has total self-belief. And yes, is he as skilled as Lomachenko? I don't think that he is. And in the end, maybe skills win fights, they tend to be that case. But that... the idea that Lomachenko is just going to walk over him, I will say I'll be surprised if that happens.
I can't wait for this fight, and the reason ultimately is that great unknown that you said. I mean, they both have 15 pro fights, but it couldn't be more different in terms of the experience level. Like, Lomachenko won 2 gold medals in the Olympics and had this long amateur career and then started fighting world-class opposition, and like his pro debut, fought for titles in his second and third fight. You know, he's won titles in 3 divisions and 15 pro fights and has fought nothing but killers. Teo's got 15 pro fights. Luke, and he's got, you know, maybe 2 world-class opponents. You know, he beat Diego Magdaleno, and then in December, he moved up to face Richard Comey for that IBF belt and destroyed him in a round and a half. And it's what we don't know about Lopez that ultimately makes this, which is what I've called kind of a pseudo 50-50 fight. Now, again, it's not a 50-50 fight on the betting odds. It's not a 50-50 fight to the fans you and the experts you just mentioned who are like, oh, come on, hell no, Loma's going to teach this guy a lesson. But it's 50-50 on the stance that I really don't think you can be confident either way in picking this fight because of one important thing. Now, when this fight was first talked about, it was before Lopez had went up and done that to Comey. It was when he struggled a bit with Nakatani in that decision win. But again, there were a lot of factors behind the scenes in terms of family drama that contributed to that. When they first announced that this fight was thought about, I'm like, no, come on. Lopez is, you know, he's 22 at the time. He doesn't have the pro experience. This may be a Fernando Vargas situation all over again. Vargas, you know, was incredible at 21, 22. Then at age 23, he moved up and fought Tito Trinidad, took an absolute beating in one of the best fights of this century. 2 fights later, same thing happened against De La Hoya. And really, Vargas, despite being a big name, never really fulfilled his full potential here. But the more you look at what Lopez actually does and what actually makes him dangerous, I'm telling you, that is the potential kryptonite on how someone is going to give Lomachenko a problem. I said it before in the buildup to this fight on Morning Combat. Lomachenko is so abstract in his game plan that traditional boxers just can't figure him out. The footwork's off the charts, the angles, all that stuff. But he's never fought a guy who is the same in his own way, in his own style. Lopez doesn't follow traditional patterns. He doesn't come in with a regular jab and a right over the top. He does leaping Roy Jones shit, stuff that you can't do unless you're a freak athlete, unless you have the power to make it count, and unless you have a ball bag the size of the Lopez family, which I'm telling you, the more you look at this father and son trainer team, you can't figure out if they're just crazy as shit and they're over their head and they're going to drown, or if maybe they know something. I think there is something to what you said, Luke, about the confidence and courage here. Lopez doesn't know in some ways that you're not supposed to do this at 23 and come in and be this confident and believe you're going to knock out Lomachenko. And that may be the thing that helps him find success. Is it most likely that Lomachenko is just going to give him problems all night and that 12 round bell is going to get hit and it's going to be 10 rounds to two for Loma? Maybe. But the first three, four rounds here, Luke, it's going to be high volume theater, high level theater here, because I don't care how great Loma is, and he's spectacular. He can't prepare in the gym for a guy like this, a guy so unorthodox, a guy so young, athletic, strong, and ballsy. That's the key to this fight. And when I watched the Teofimo tape like you, I just come away going, dude, there's something here that is just different and special. So I can't wait, most importantly, Luke, for, you know, obviously early in the fight, but really the first six rounds. Lopez will retain the one punch chance throughout the whole fight, right? He'll never really be out of it. But the later this fight gets, when you consider his age, his lack of experience at this level, it's more likely that Lomachenko is just going to set traps, frustrate him, and that, like I said, that 12-round distance is going to show up sooner than later. I need to see, within the first four rounds, basically, if Lopez can make adjustments and if he can land something of substance to make Lomachenko realize, I can't be the full wizard here because this guy's a little bit too dangerous. That, Luke, is when the real fight will start. If you're a Loma guy and you're saying, BC, you're crazy, you got a hard-on for this kid, bro, watch the tape, okay? We're going to find out. That's why we love to see these fights, because we don't freaking know. I don't know how great Lopez can be. I'm not even sure he does. But that unknown is what makes it, brother. Nobody has the potential to do to Lomachenko what Lopez has the chance on Saturday night. And that's why I'm fired the hell up.
So I was looking up ahead of time for prep for today's show. I was looking up what were boxing experts, insiders, media, whoever, what were they saying prior to the last fight that Lopez had, which was against Richard Comey, as you indicated. And the odds had it, as we talked about, I think, on last Wednesday's show, the odds had it at roughly a pick'em. So the odds makers knew that it was going to be close. But gun to the head scenario, Lomachenko thought Comey was going to win. He said so outright. Numerous, and I do mean numerous, in fact, the vast majority of media that I saw had picked Comey. And then the reason why they picked Comey was, one, that he was going to be able to drag it out and make it sort of a more of a technical boxing match over the course of the distance, and that he had looked better in his recent fights. Now, you're right. The Nakatani fight was not the best showcase of Lopez. He is still trying to figure everything out. However, I don't do predictions for this reason. I'm not bagging on everybody who gets predictions wrong, because, hello, I've gotten some whoppers wrong before. That's why they're that hard to do. But it does serve my theory, BC, that people see something in Lopez missing that I don't. When I watch Lopez, dude, he does not move like other boxers. Neither does Lomachenko for that reason. And I'm not saying they move identically. But sometimes, BC, you know this, and this is a little bit subjective. It's not science. Sometimes you watch a fighter, MMA, whatever, and they jump off the screen and you immediately get latched onto them because they don't do things commonly the way other ones do. You can just tell right away something is different with them. When Khabib was making his way through the division, you were like, dude, he's doing this in a way that people don't. Or pick anybody else. John Jones, when he was throwing Stephen Bonner and then bludgeoning and breaking the face of Brandon Vera and then making short work of Matyushenko, you were like, holy shit, man, this guy, like, what is happening here? Dude, Lopez jumps off the screen like that to me. To me. And that's not science, that's subjectivity. But when I see this kid, I'm like, dude, I don't know why everyone is committed to this idea that because he is young and unrefined, he is not that great. He is not the put-together package that Lomachenko is. But what he has, great decision-making, excellent athleticism, huge power and a willingness to rise and an ability to rise to the challenge. For folks who may not know what happened in his last fight, when the boxing world thought Comey was going to beat him, Lopez knocked his ass out inside of two, and with one punch, by the way. That was it. That's what this kid can do. Everyone says he's okay, and then he goes in there and lands a thunderous shot over someone people thought was going to be able to be the better boxer. I am telling you now, man, listen, Lomachenko is as special as advertised. Take him seriously. And whatever else that Lopez and his father say, I know they take him seriously. He probably should win because he is the more developed product. Lopez, I think, is going to turn some heads, and one of those might be Lomachenko's on Saturday night.
And wow, well said there. And we wouldn't be this confident about Lopez's potential chances, Luke, if Lomachenko wasn't, admittedly, even from himself, at a weight class that's above his optimum level, right? Like, he could still be fighting at 126 right, if everybody was willing to fight him. He said yesterday that 130 probably would be his best weight. He also said, I don't think I can ever go above 135. And again, of his four fights there, he is 4-0, got dropped by Linares. Pedraza and Luke Campbell had moments. Those guys are not the punchers Lopez is. They're not as brash or braven either. So that's a threat, but it's all going to come down to how good of a boxer is Lopez really. He told me in that interview on Morning Combat this week that, you know, that unknown, he knows what he's got in the tank. He knows he can box. He doesn't have to show it, and that's the thing. And while the Nakatani fight, I say throw it out, because you have to understand, if you know the family's backstory, the dad and trainer is batshit crazy, straight up. I mean, there's actually a top-ranked produced
pre-fight documentary video. Who's crazier, Lopez Sr. or Angel Garcia?
It's pretty close, but I'm actually going to go Lopez Sr. in this regard. There's actually, wow, Top Rank's got a Blood, Sweat, and Tears pre-fight documentary series out there on YouTube, and the second episode has this weird stretch where Lopez talks about him and his dad had a falling out recently, and Lopez is crying, saying, you know, he used to be my hero, now I'm realizing I have to look up to myself. I mean, look, there's some ish going on there, and ahead of that Nakatani fight, like, to be full disclosure, Lopez got married, his family hates his wife, they were like all fighting in the locker room and on the way to the ring as he's walking to the fight. He was more worried in the ring that night that his wife was going to be okay against his own family members. Okay, is that an excuse at the end of the day? Well, if he had lost, you could say it was. But he did right the ship late against Nakatani. It wasn't inspiring. It wasn't exciting. He figured out how to win with his jab. We hadn't seen that out of him. It was not a great performance, but he avoided the Titanic, basically, in that moment. He's going to have to show us that he can box if he does not tag Lomachenko early. But yeah, this is everything I want. Luke, I want to predict Lopez will do it. But, you know, the deeper you get into this, the more you watch the interviews, the more you try to play the head games, the more you watch the tape. Good God, Lomachenko is everything. I mean, he really is. He didn't want to talk to me, Luke, about whether this is his era or if he's the pound-for-pound king. And look, rightfully so. It's fine, okay? He just wants to get in there and fight. But he's a gorgeous, beautiful artist. The bet is that he wins by decision. Gun to my head, he wins by decision. But man, can I not wait to see what Lopez can do.
I am too much of a total puss to pick Lopez. I really am. And also, I have too much respect for Lomachenko and what he has shown across weight. Lomachenko has shown you actually in a fight, he has shown you a more complete upside. Right? If you're banking on Lopez, you are being much more speculative, and I think that is the difference. You're like, well, I've not seen it, but I think it's there. With Lomachenko, you know it's there, and that, I think, is creating this gap. I just hope folks understand that a lot of this talk about Lopez, I've seen a consistent... They did it with... Dude, it's something interesting. It's like these greats that come up, and Lopez hasn't done the same as Adesanya. The comparisons are not fair, and I hate to cross sports too, but I know our audience would more readily understand an MMA comparison. But it's like when Adesanya was coming up, it's like he ain't shit against Vettori, he ain't shit against, you know, Brad Tavares, he ain't shit against Brunson, and it's like he's never anything all the way up through one of the most incredible UFC runs ever. It's like at what point, yeah, is he something? Lopez is not that far along in his journey. This would be the most major step, but I got to tell you, BC, I cannot wait. And by the way, for the folks who are watching the show right now, the main event for the UFC should air at a different time than the main event.
Yeah, we're getting lucky here.
Lopez.
We're getting lucky here that ESPN is broadcasting both. So it looks like a 7 p.m. Eastern start time for the UFC main card, Luke, and that should end in time for, you know, the 10 p.m. Eastern start time of the boxing main card. I think the Lomachenko fight is the fourth fight on that main card, so that'll probably go, you know, closer to midnight. But fired up. A lot of our listeners and viewers astutely made this comparison, Luke, that Lomachenko-Lopez is not too far off from Canelo Mayweather. Canelo was also 23 in that fight. As we remember, though, he fought a horrible game plan. He tried to outbox the greatest boxer of this era and never once really put his foot on the gas and tried to make it a fight. I do believe that should Lopez find himself down, you know, 7-1, he's going to go for it, because that's what you're going to have to do in that situation.
Yeah, and then last thing I'd say is, you know, I'll give credit where it's due. ESPN is putting on Lomachenko and Lopez essentially for free, or, you know, through a cable subscription with their ESPN television channel. There's no pay-per-view for this, nothing. Just turn on your TV if you've got cable or YouTube TV or whatever. It's right there. And then on ESPN Plus, we're going to get Ortega and Korean Zombie. They got two great main events across two platforms on the same weekend. You know, this is why when people are like, what did Scott Van Pelt say about, you know, blah, 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 knockout? It's like, who gives a shit? Look at what they're doing. If you're a fight fan, I'll say it again, never been a better time to be a fight fan in the history of the universe. Enjoy what we have.
Thank you, future Disney employee Luke Thomas right there. All right, yeah, okay. This is the same company that didn't recognize this guy. They don't want to pay this guy. They don't want to help my kid into travel soccer, all right?
Hey, Disney's got issues with communist China too. All right, well, enough of that nonsense. BC, you and I, we're idiots. We get things wrong all the time. Yeah. Take it away, sir. It's time to pay the piper.
Yeah, it is time to pay up and face the music here. We call it dead wrong. Let's go through the things that we missed this week. Luke, the first person to auction off their corner spot in UFC history apparently isn't Mike Perry. Yes, we have to give the credit to the recent idea, apparently, to the podcast of, what's his name? Josh Thompson, was it, the podcast? Anyway. Yeah,
Weighing In.
Thank you, Weighing In. Great podcast. Evan Tanner apparently was the first one to actually auction off his corner. The late former UFC middleweight champ, right?
Yeah. When did he do that? What's the story there?
Well, here's the wording from an old article that our crack research team. Additionally, Tanner has a special package. Wow. I'd like to see that. Available once per fight
He's dead, BC. He's dead.
Oh, God. Once per fight for an individual sponsor who essentially becomes a cornerman for Tanner. The sponsor will accompany Tanner to the weigh-ins the day before the event, and on fight night, he or she will be in the dressing room and accompany him to the octagon. So basically, what Tanner was auctioning off was somebody to be a human billboard, right?
That's interesting. Always remember this. You have to get a cornerman's license. Now, if Vittori Gonzalez can get one without a combative background, I suppose that they are not so scrutinizing with it in terms of what your preparation is to be in that role with the specific occupational skills. But I did not, honestly, sometimes on we do dead wrong and I'm like, oh, I should have known better, or I did know better and I just messed it up. I did not know this. I did not know that Evan Tanner did this. Or if I did, I completely forgot. So, okay, you got us. You got us good with that one.
Luke, are you okay with very pregnant Coach Vittori entering into COVID bubbles to be there for her man?
It's the second time I think you've asked me this, which is a very weird obsession of yours. So why don't we leave it alone?
All right, yeah, I don't need Mike Perry offering to kill you as well. All right, our second dead wrong of the week, Luke. Maybe the third will be me if I keep bringing up Mike Perry's name. Luke, on our Monday show, you said at apparently the 11:15 a.m. mark that Marlon Moraes was a former, I guess people think you were alluding to former UFC champion, and you got
I think I said UFC champion, yeah.
Luke, you got lit the hell up in the comments. People coming for your soul. People were like, yep. Elian Gonzalez's father, we're coming for you, bro, okay? Shout out to that Hispanic man. Luke, could you do your mea culpa here? You meant World Series of Fighting, correct?
Well, you know, that I knew. That part I'll say for sure. Here's what I just completely forgot. I somehow in my mind had it that Marlon was the champion when Cejudo beat him. But, of course, that's not the case. They were competing for a vacant title.
Yes.
That was the reality. So everyone knew he was the World Series of Fighting champion. He had that belt forever. But I botched it. My brain just did not work appropriately that time. So you know what? Mea culpa. I'm guilty. Guilty as charged, sir.
All right. So our producers have, I don't think this is dead wrong. Our producers have given us a note here. This sounds dead right to me. They're saying Brendan Schaub actually
I know what the issue is here, but go ahead.
Yeah, Brendan Schaub actually did give Corey Sandhagen his nickname of the Sandman on the Below the Belt. So it was in Food Truck Diaries? Is this what
we're saying? That's right. That's what you got wrong. You said it was Food Truck Diaries. It was not. It was Below the Belt. That was the issue.
I thought they were sharing a piece of meat there or something, but when breaking, we made a post, then Corey reposted it, changed his IG handle, and made it his nickname. Well done, Big Brown. Sorry your guy Big Beige got it wrong. Luke, I did want to give you the double shout-out. Your interview with Corey Sandhagen this week on the MK YouTube page, very, very intellectual and well done. I mean, that's what you bring to the table. I almost think you're so good at your job breaking down people's style, Luke, that eventually they're going to turn on you and send you to hell for exposing them.
No, but you know what's happened recently is I've actually had fighters and coaches ask me to do it for them. That has happened, which I'm pretty excited about.
A little side work action. I like
that. No, I haven't done it. I haven't done it, but I was shocked by that. I was like, holy shit. Okay. All right. But now it's happened like a dozen times. So you know what? All right, let's suck it, bitch. Yes.
Yeah. So yeah, suck the horn. Here we go. Let's move on. Our dead wrong from last week was me admitting that I got it wrong. It wasn't Bazooka Joe as the Bellator Season 1 guy. It was Jason Chambers. But you said, hey, Jason Chambers did the Human Weapon with Jimmy Smith. That's dead wrong, a-hole. Jason Chambers did Human Weapon with Bill Duff. Jimmy Smith did Fight Quest with Doug Anderson, better, more hardcore show, according to whoever wrote this.
And apparently the two shows are confused and were filmed around the same time, the producer notes say. Jimmy and Jason had an MMA match before both shows started filming, and Jimmy won by submission. Jimmy's a beast. Yeah, I fucked that up.
Jimmy was one of the early color commentators on American Ninja Warrior one season. You remember that?
Wait, what? Is that true?
That is true. Now they have the tried and true team of Matt Eisman, the white guy, and then the ex-NFL guy, Akbar Kabaja Gamila. You know that guy?
I interviewed him for Super Bowl Radio last year.
Love those guys. I love that show. My kids love that show. My family does. But yes, Jimmy Smith was like season two, I think, or something. He was the ooh and ah color commentator guy. Yeah.
That is crazy. I had no idea. That's amazing. Well, you know what? I fucked that one up too. But in my defense, they were very similar shows. I mean, I could tell you the differences if they were airing at the time, and I remember thinking about some of the differences. But in retrospect, could you tell me the difference between Fight Quest and Human Weapon in great detail? And also, who the fuck is Doug Anderson?
I don't know.
And who's Bill Duff? I don't know who these motherfuckers are.
Duff Beer? I don't know.
All the dead wrongs were about me. I mean, one of them was about
I got a couple. I got a couple here. They're not on the list. I got a couple. All right. Well, we are collectively dead wrong. Oh, but first of all, Jimmy Smith replaced you, true or false, on Sirius XM.
Yes, but I'm the one who got him hired. So
no, I'm not saying this in a negative sense. I'm saying like I haven't heard the show since he replaced you. Is he doing well? I love Jimmy Smith.
He is doing extremely well. He is. You know what happened to him with his commentary is a crime. And when he lost that job, I called him right away and I was like, "We got a job for you here." And he kind of played the role of like temp dude. You know, I wasn't happy to leave SiriusXM, but what made me happy to leave it in that sense was I knew they were going to be in good hands. He is fucking killing it over there because he's super smart, Jimmy, and super good at that job.
All right, we had a debate on Monday's show, Luke, about Joaquin Buckley's knockout. Where did it fit in the greatest knockouts in MMA history? You and I started sharing our favorites. We compare and contrasted. The people lost their shit that we didn't bring up the following knockouts in that discussion, so I'll tell you we were dead wrong. Ben Askren, Jorge Masvidal. Yeah. Dan Henderson, Michael Bisping. Yeah, and here's the one that I regret not adding there. Yair Rodriguez, Korean Zombie. I think of those three, Luke, I give Yair's one the best chance at competing for that number one spot.
By the way, my daughter is hammering the door. Can you hear it?
Oh, I thought that was Reggie Jackson, the cat. All right.
That is not Reggie Jackson. That is my daughter. She keeps doing this. I'm going to bring her on the air because that is crazy. But okay.
Hey, it's Friday, Luke. We don't have to wear pants. We can bring our family on the show. It's whatever, right?
Listen, we were not giving an exhaustive review of all the best KOs. We were coming up with it off the top of our heads. dingleberries. So yes, could there have been a better list? Of course there could have been. But it wasn't like that was our edited, like you and I sat down with a pen and paper and made a list and then, oh, you know what? What about Askren and Masvidal? Let's scratch that one off. We didn't do that shit. We were just ad-libbing.
All right, here's what I was dead wrong on this week. A couple times I mentioned Lomachenko having that really fun fight with Jorge Linares in which he got dropped. I had made reference that it went the distance. Somebody jumped in with a YouTube comment here to send me straight. Do we have that or are we not going to shout this guy out? Where are we at? There, I don't know. Okay. It was, they're right. The guy jumped in. He sent me to hell. It was a 10th round TKO in which Linares got dropped. It looked like he could get up, Luke. It almost looked like he was just like, no Moschenko, I'm good. You know, it was a fun fight, but that's it. So that did not go the distance. No harm, no foul. I screwed it up. It was the sniper Pedraza fight right after that did. And one more on Dead Wrong. It's not going to be us. I'm going to spin it back on the people. I made a reference in that solo Morning Combat video I did this week of the five reasons why I love this Lopez-Lomachenko fight that Lomachenko's only pro loss, his second fight, the title fight against Salido, right? The action hero. I said, you know, he kind of got robbed on the scorecards. Hey, guys, everyone that came at me this week, it's not dead wrong. You're dead wrong. Lomachenko did get robbed on the score. He got robbed many ways. Look, I'm not saying that's the reason why he lost. The reason why Lomachenko lost that fight ultimately was that he wasn't ready for somebody who could put on the pressure, could fight dirty, could be all up in his ass the whole damn night. Wow, shout out to the little lady here. He also got screwed on the cards, though. Lawrence Cole, the referee, screwed him with all those dong shots. And, yeah, let's bring on Luke's daughter here, please. Can we get me stop talking about dongs?
Come here. Can you say hi? Say hi. Say hola.
Yes.
Can you say apple?
Apple.
Yeah.
Apple.
Yeah.
Hey, Vio. Hey, Vio. How do you like them apples?
He's saying, how do you like apples? ¿Te gusta manzanas? It's not a toy.
Because Vio, I got a number. Yeah, there we go. All right.
Viole, say bye, Pippi.
Bye, Pippi.
Yeah. Say, Brian, you're a puto.
Bye.
She tried. This is my daughter one. This is Violetta. Look at that smile. Say, oh, watch this. Here we go. Brian, you ready for this one? Take a look at her face. Ready?
Yes.
Sonrisa. Yeah. That means smile in Spanish. Okay, and she wants to see ducks on the YouTube. So there you go. Okay, we're gonna say bye bye. Okay, ciao. Ciao. Can you say ciao? Can you say ciao?
Hey Vio, oh, no, go grab Abuela for me, Vio. I got some things to ask her.
She's in Colombia. Here we go.
All right, Luke, that'll wrap up Dead Wrong this week.
Sorry, I'm here.
Live show. The live show.
But you know what? And now my cat is in here. Here, want to see my cat? Hang on.
I do. What's this cat's name, Luke, since we're just off the rails, apparently?
Yeah, we were just completely fucking done. It's Friday. This is Moco.
Oh, you know yeah. Why he's called? Look at that guy.
Do you know why he's called Moco?
No.
Because Moco means booger in Spanish. And if you look at his nose, he has a black spot on it. My cat's name is Booger. My wife was like, seriously? Fucking Moco? That's what we're going to call the fucking cat? Moco?
Yes.
I was like, yes, because the gringos won't know, and everyone else who does will be like, seriously, Moco? En serio?
If you guys have more children and you have twin girls, by any chance, the next time, would you consider, Luke, I got two names for you, ready? Valentina Antonina as the Thomas twins.
No, I think we'd probably pass on that. All right. Anything else we're dead wrong about or not?
Nah, that's it. That shit's over.
All right. With that in mind, it's time before we do our last segment. We have to do tip to tip, BC. We were calling it just the tip last week, but we're going to go back to what the animation is. Tip to tip. This is where we just give you, you know, some advice, something to look out for, a lesson, a suggestion. BC, what do you have for tip to tip?
Why don't you go first this week, Luke? Okay, you got a producer credit. Why don't you go first?
All right, fair enough. In today's version of tip to tip, this was not something I thought I would be recommending, except I have now encountered a number of people that when I bring up this thing, they have never heard of it. Now, in some states, you may not have heard of it because you don't need it, but depending on where you live, this will be extremely handy. Namely, there is an alcohol delivery service. It is called Drizzly, D-R-I-Z-L-Y. I believe they have a website, but that's not what I use. On my Samsung Galaxy Note S20 Ultra, I get the app. I have a Drizzly app, and what it does is, it's like Uber Eats. You punch it open, and you're like, hey, I'd like to order... actually, I don't know if you can order malt liquor through there, but let's say you wanted a keg of beer, but even something more general. You wanted some Jack Daniels. You fire up the search, and it will tell you all the liquor stores that have it and in what quantity. You order it, and it will deliver it to you. If you want something local, it's even got like a little local piece on there where you can be like, I want local beer, I want local this, I want local that. It's very, very handy. Usually get your stuff within, for me, and I live in the nation's capital, I still get it in 20 to 30 minutes. Little bit of an upcharge on it, but you're paying for the convenience, so okay, you know, use it sparingly. But I got to tell you, if you're looking for alcohol delivery, and if you're a degenerate like me, that is a very important thing in this COVID era, Drizzly. Two thumbs up.
What's the delivery times like, Luke?
Well, it depends where you order from. So let's say you punched in... what you would punch in, right? Smirnoff Ice, something to really get those balls sagging. It would tell you who had it, in what quantities, and how far away they are, how long it would take. So you can match it, and it matches next to your address. Obviously, they have to know where to drop it off. But I have found them to be very, very reliable. If it says 30 minutes, it'll take 30. If they say an hour, trust them, it'll take an hour. Very, very good service.
That's a good tip, Luke. Just the tip. Thank you. Just for a second. All right, here's my tip of the week. Look, I got to come clean on something. I feel like I've been harboring a secret for a long time. My wife's been saying I'm going through a midlife crisis. It's time for me to come real and essentially come out of the closet on this, Luke. I've been a music snob my whole life, okay? You know, I had a 100-disc CD changer in my first apartment with massive speakers. I used to judge people by what music they listened to. The same way you hold this badge on your chest of the hardcore abortion rock, you know, premeditation of mass shooting music. You know, I felt the same way with, you know, classic rock. While I certainly love dad rock and indie rock today, I'm a classic rock guy, right? I'm Stones. I'm all that stuff. Hey, guys, why don't we just put the reveal down on the bottom before I even get to it? That's fine. It's not a big deal. So here's the deal. Luke, you know what? I'm going through a midlife crisis now. I'm buying
vinyl.
Your tip
is worthless. I'm giving them how to get alcohol sent via the magic of your phone, and you're telling these fuckers about Land of Confusion? What is wrong with you?
No, I'm not. Here we go. So I got this vinyl addiction now, and it's one of the best things that ever happened to me, and it's like a drug. Yeah, it costs more than drugs. But I got four speakers all around this office. All I do is listen to vinyl. And after acquiring some dead people's record collections, Luke, I never thought I'd be this guy. Maybe it's being 42 with gray hair and weird, but Genesis really bangs, Luke. And I know it's lame 70s prog rock. I can't stop. It's amazing. It's so good, Luke. Foxtrot bangs. I'm sorry, all right? Three Sides Live, it bangs. It really does. Look, even Duke, after Peter Gabriel left, it's really damn good. And you know what? The spinoff solo ones... Peter Gabriel 1 and 2, good God, the first Phil Collins, it's awesome. I feel like I'm telling you, Luke, that I prefer it from the back end, and I don't care what you think about me. 70s prog rock, even the Genesis transferring into pop. I'm sorry. I'm 42 and I love Phil Collins. What the hell are you going to do with that information? I don't care, Luke. This is who I am right now. This is who I've become. Genesis bangs, it really does. I'm sorry, it really does.
Here is how you know you have totally given up as a human being. This is for folks who are younger than us, and there's probably many of you, not everyone, but many of you. Let me explain to you how cool works. Cool is a time in your life, typically 18 to 34. It can extend either before or after, but that's the window, is 18 to 34, okay? And what happens during that window is you are in touch with what everyone else who is also in that window understands as the best practices, how to dress your hair, what to say, what to wear, what to listen to, what to eat, how to look. That's what cool is. As you get further and further outside that bubble, you stop understanding what cool is, but then pining for it. And then you get to the stage Brian is in, which is not only are you outside the stage of cool, you no longer pine for it. You have gone full in. There's no such thing as a guilty pleasure anymore because I've got old balls and I'm past the point of caring what anyone else has to say about the things that matter in my life. It doesn't even matter. Your claims of him being uncool, talk about falling on deaf ears. It doesn't ring true to him.
So my tip is this week is, you know, I was always, you know, the Stone Zeppelin guy. I didn't have time for yacht rock, jazz rock, art rock, prog rock, anything. Dude, I'm in now. I'm sorry. It's so good. You know what I did yesterday, Luke? You know what I did? I found a lady on Facebook who was selling, you know, even deeper albums in the Genesis catalog. I met her like it was a drug deal outside of her house. We did the pit. I came home. Do you know the first thing I did? You know the first damn thing I did, Luke? I grabbed this piece of business here from Phil Collins. I jacked the four speakers up to really high volume. And I was bum, 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 bum. Luke, I can feel it coming in here tonight, okay? It was awesome. I don't care who knows. I open the windows and let the people have it, okay? This is who I am. God.
This is not so much a tip as it is a cry for help. There's BC's Friday cry for help. Someone send the ambulance because my old boy is in need. Jesus Christ. All right, well, there you have
my
it,
my heart's going boom, boom, boom. Come on, it's so good. Yeah. Woo.
Let's get some edibles going. All right, BC, we have one more segment here. It's where we do our Friday review. I fucked this up on Monday by not telling people they had to do this, but if you're an MMA fan of all of recent time, chances are you've probably seen this movie. Hell, even if you aren't an MMA fan, chances are you've seen this movie. It's time for, it's time for a discussion about Warrior, BC. This movie came out by Lionsgate in 2011, starring Joel Edgerton, Tom Hardy, Nick Nolte. I think first we should give our scores and then talk about why we gave our scores. What do you say about that?
Apparently this is the new trend in the show. I usually have these great, you know, prepared statements and we just like to give it away right in the beginning here. Luke, I just want to say this. I can't believe I hadn't seen this movie. And I had heard, by the way, you know, both sides of people saying, oh, this movie sucks, it blows. And people like my dad going, hey, did you see this movie? It's like Rocky for cage fighting. I also worked with John Anik and Rashad Evans on MMA Live back in the day, sitting right next to them when they were, you know, going off to film this, and I hadn't seen it. So I'm glad that the people picked it this week, Luke. I came in because you had told me this, full disclosure. You had said, oh, you never saw that, BC? Well, here's the deal. I hate it, but you're probably going to love it. So, Luke, I came in thinking like, oh, God, you know, I came in ready to hate it. Because I'm like, no, Luke thinks this is for my old ass, my Genesis listening to ass. F him. I'm going to find out and tell him how bad it is, all right? That I'm more of a man than he thinks I am. Luke, 3/4 of the way through, let's say right up until the point that the Sparta tournament started, like the first round of the Sparta tournament. You remember where we are in the movie at that point? Right? Yes. Where the principal is on his couch going, he did it! He did it! At that point, Luke, I had a little tear forming in my eye, and I'm like, this is awesome! This movie's like a 10 out of 10! I don't care who knows! I love Peter Gabriel! That's really what I was thinking in that moment. Dude, it went down the cliff from that point on. I'm not here to say that you were necessarily wrong. I would love to hear your score, please.
All right, look, you flash my score on the screen here, and I'll explain why I came to the conclusion that I did. Let's see it. Let's have the big reveal. 6. 6 out of 10 is what I'm going to
give it. Okay. I can respect that.
Here's why. Because no matter your view of the movie, did you like it? Did you not? Was it too long? Because it was fucking long. Was it not? Here's one thing you cannot take from this film, and I think no matter what we say after this, BC, I'm guessing you're going to agree. I feel like this is the very easy call. The individual performances from Joel Edgerton, one of the brothers, Tom Hardy, and Nick Nolte, magnificent.
And the wife. The wife, kind of sneaky, right?
The wife, that's not my type, but you know, she wasn't. She didn't have an accent. She wasn't throwing furniture at him, so that's not the kind of women I'm attracted to. But you get the idea. Listen, I think you can agree, in all seriousness, those guys took those roles, and whatever it was written on paper from the screenwriters, they took it to another level. In particular, I thought Nick Nolte was just, he really leaned into that character and was every part of it. And, you know, the character was designed to be a little bit pathetic, and he was, in the way in which I think it was intended, but almost in a way where you couldn't help pitying, but also like being mad at him and also understanding why everyone reviled him, you know, a life's full of regrets and trying to make up for it at the last minute with this almost tangential connection to your own children. Tom Hardy is a beast. He's a total chameleon. He can play virtually every role. I love that about him, including over-the-top masculine, you know, smash-your-face-in types, right?
Semper Fi, then, brother.
Exactly, Semper Fi. Well, he deserted his unit, so fuck him for that. But in other news, you know...
he saved those people, Luke. He saved those people, all right?
He did save them, and then he turned into what we call a Blue Falcon, which if anyone knows... Marine Corps lingo, you'll know what that means. And then lastly, Joel Edgerton.
Is that like a prog rock Marine? A Blue Falcon?
No, but I bet Blue Falcons listen to prog rock. But here's the point. Joel Edgerton shows up and he plays the character that he's supposed to be, like the one who kind of figured it out and got it right. But he couldn't leave his angry and difficult past behind and his existing financial troubles. So I will say Edgerton, amazing. Hardy, amazing. Really, even the side, to your point, Frank Grillo, the trainer to Joel Edgerton's character. I thought he was great in that role as well.
John Anik, 10 out of 10, bro.
Anik was good. Here's the problem. When you Kurt look
Angle.
Past the...
Dude, Kurt Angle's in this movie, Luke. He was awesome.
But Kurt Angle had no dialogue, which is part of the reason why this movie sucked. I'm going to give it a 6, strictly based off of how well those characters were portrayed by those actors. But everything else about this movie is flimsy and shitty. All right? I don't want to talk too long here, BC. I'll just say this, and we can explore it on your
terms.
No, talk long,
Luke. It's Friday. Talk long, please.
Here's the problem. Totally predictable. I mean, what other fucking way was this going to go, right? Number one. Number two, they have these villains in the movie, like the Eric Apple character, Mad Dog, whatever his last name was, and then Koba. They are totally underdeveloped, right? It's ridiculous. Then, on top of it, they try to, like, make it be smarter than it is because the dad is listening to Moby Dick on tape and he's really giving Captain Ahab a talking to when he falls off the wagon and drinks the bottle. Like, really over-the-top, sappy bullshit. And then at the same time, they're playing Beethoven's 9th Symphony, which was his last one, Ode to Joy. Frank Grillo is saying shit like, listen to the music. What the fuck does that even mean, Frank? It doesn't mean anything. It's the worst fucking advice
I've
ever heard.
Frank.
Get a fucking haircut, Frank. And also, if you know anything about Beethoven's 9th Symphony, and I do because it got me through some dark times in my life, that is the one unique symphony in Beethoven's oeuvre, which is... He wrote it after he'd become deaf, and he had been in deep despair, and this was him coming out of it. It's also the only one he ever wrote with voices, for folks who may not know that. And Ode to Joy was actually a poem.
Peter Gabriel. Yeah.
And Ode to Joy was actually a poem by another poet that he had brought over, so it's actually just the 9th Symphony. But it's about nothing that has to do with fighting. In fact, it's the opposite of that shit. And that's his walkout music, is Beethoven's Ode to Joy. And then, just a little side note, BC, you got these Marines all in uniform in one section. First of all, the Marines are not going to do that. They're going to talk shit about you because I know I was in the Marine Corps. They're going to laugh at you if you lose and then, you know, begrudgingly congratulate you if you win because that's the Marine Corps.
They don't
even sing the words of the Marine Corps hymn correctly. They do the cardinal sin, which is we will fight our country's battle. There is no will in the Marine Corps hymn. It's we fight, motherfucker, not a future tense. We do it now from the fucking shores of Tripoli to every other goddamn place. They even got the fucking words wrong of the Marine Corps hymn. This is like getting Exodus wrong. This is like getting Revelations wrong. How fucking dare you mess that up? You're like, oh, it's one word. It's one word, Luke. It's one word in the Marine Corps hymn that from the first day of boot camp, they tell you, don't put the fucking word will in between we and fight. Just say we fight. They beat your ass over the head with it, quite literally. They fucking take chairs and smack you over the head like it's backyard pro wrestling. Don't say we will fight. And they said we will fight in the fucking movie. And for that reason, fail. There you go, BC.
Wow. Well done. Well done right there. A 6 from Luke. All right. Here's my score. Let's put it up there. We'll reveal it. It's actually favorable in the end because of how it's 7.1. And I know what you might be thinking.
I think that's
too,
fine.
That, All right. Well, here's why. I'm not kidding at the three-quarter mark. I wanted to hate it, but I was like, God, this is like almost like for a male action movie that purposely was grabbing like the spirit of Rocky, a little bit from Hoosiers, a little bit from like every one of these sort of underdog, hard scrabble, comeback sports movies that we like. And they did it in a way that really, I'm sorry, like it was presented so cool. It was presented without cliche, without being too cliche, I thought. And really the key part was that everything they had shown about MMA until the start of that tournament was fairly right on. I mean, like it wasn't insulting to it. So I was ready to give a little bit of leniency like we do in the Rocky movies. Like if you're a boxing hardcore and you watch the Rocky movie, I mean, like there's no chance. I mean, like Rocky Balboa and the Drago fight takes like 4,000 unanswered punches and comes back and wins. Like obviously that's movie level boxing. So I was prepared to give leniency for certain things here. I was overwhelmed at the three-quarter mark that they got me. There were chill bump scenes. They actually made you care about Nolte's relationship with the kids and lack of and all that. And I think they did an amazing job at certain points, Luke, of teasing without telling you what really happened. So you weren't really sure if Tom Hardy was a war hero or if there was something sketchy that led him to act the way he did. I also thought for the most part, they sort of nailed the roles in a broken family of people that are just sort of unwilling to forgive each other no matter what. I mean, there were so many elements of this entering that tournament that I'm like, okay, it's obvious that we're setting up for brother versus brother. It's obvious that older bro math teacher or whatever is going to have to pull a few upsets, but I'm here. I'm ready. I don't know if in that moment I gave them too much credit. And then when it went south, I was extra angry. But I was extra angry. And here's my main issues, Luke. And, you know, I just told you I suspend disbelief for the Rocky movies. But here's my main issues. The reveal that they're actually brothers, which comes off the reveal, by the way, that Tom Hardy, who we thought for a half hour was a war hero, may not actually be. That's the freaking, like, Luke, I am your father moment of this film. I need to stretch that shit out. I need to hear the announcers and the organizers of Sparta going, do we really want to put on this final if it's brother versus brother? You know that beach scene earlier of the two brothers trying to talk and have it out? I need that right before the main event when they make it to the final. I need this to be a dilemma. I need Nick Nolte in the middle of that saying, you don't have to fight each other. We could just love each other. And then them going, no, it has to be this way. I need something like that rather than a fast forward right into the final as if nothing's happened. And Brian Callen, who, by the way, actually did a pretty damn good, almost like poor man's Joe Rogan meets the good parts about Mike Goldberg type of role.
Not many of those.
He just haphazardly was like, oh, we've come to find out that they're actually brothers and his name isn't Reardon. It's like, dude, that's a monster reveal in this moment. So that pissed me the hell off. But what put it over the top, Luke, was the final two rounds. So Tommy Reardon's character, like this is a state regulated event, right? Like this is like they acknowledge that the UFC exists. This movie came out in 2011, but we're led to believe that this tournament is essentially like the best of the best middleweights in the world who aren't in UFC. That's sort of what I'm believing. And at that time, you got Strikeforce. There's still things going on in Japan. I could believe you could get a good-ass tournament there. So what I'm saying is Tommy Reardon goes out for the championship bout without a trainer, without a cut man. And then he badly dislocates his shoulder in like round three. Luke, they let him go out there for two more rounds with his arm dragging. No commission member comes in there between rounds and is like, hey, man, I don't know if you should continue. Can you give me like, and maybe you're saying, dude, it's a blood and guts movie, but they sort of presented this tournament as legit. That completely turned me off on that level. And then I started critiquing and picking really even more when they pissed me off there, Luke. I believe that I could have given this movie like almost like a 9.7 and really been on it if it had come out. Tell me if I'm wrong here. If it had come out in 2005, if it had come out in 2000, if it had come out in 1997, I do believe it's hard to fathom that the two brothers with such little experience, and I know the physics teacher brother, they said had fought in the UFC before, but we learned from the wife that it went disastrously, ended up in the hospital. So he's like a washed out pro fighter. You're going to tell me on like 2 weeks notice after a couple of fights in a bar that he's going to be able to upset Anthony Johnson, who did a decent job in that role, Nate Marquardt, and then go in there against Kurt Angle, who's being presented as middleweight Fedor. And look, they did a decent job presenting that fight, but like, that was a bridge too far. And while I like Tommy Reardon's badass, no theme music, no post-fight interview element there, I mean, he just destroyed people. He's not a pro fighter, Luke. He's a Marine badass, sure. He had a good amateur wrestling career. I know Brock Lesnar walked through with just an amateur wrestling career and became a UFC champion. But two upset stories of that nature and their brothers, And finally,
yeah, they tried to do at the simultaneously too little and too much at the same time. Like, here's the other part about it. It's like Tommy's character was interesting. Again, I thought that Tom Hardy did an amazing job, but it's like, how fucking old are you? You moved to the West Coast and then the Northwest of America, and you don't even tell your brother, who, by the way, did nothing wrong, that the mother has cancer. What are you, in 10th grade and you're 16 and you're mad at the fucking world? And that's why you didn't tell your brother? Like, this is supposed to be, like, I get being mad at the dad because he was a drunk and he beat the fuck out of you. Like, there was one line where he said, you know, it must be kind of hard to find a woman who could take a punch these days, right? I remember that. That was actually a good line. I was like, wow, he must have had a fucked up background. But then you're after the brother, too, and you didn't even tell him. Because why? He was disloyal because he married a girl and didn't want a shit life. I mean, you know, you got the emotional maturity of a 14-year-old. I couldn't sign on to that at all.
So, no, straight up. And what I'm really saying about that last rant was, if that had happened in 2000 in the MMA scene where we were, you could almost believe that somebody could kind of walk on the street. The sport hadn't yet evolved, and oh, he knows some jiu-jitsu, he used to be a pro fighter years ago. Okay, that's fine. And even badass Tommy Reardon, I mean, look, in early UFC days, if you were just a badass brawler, you might win some. But Luke, you're telling me they show up for the press conference and neither of them are watching any TV and media? They're not looking over who I might have to fight, and they just go, oh, my brother's in this? Like, come on.
Yeah. Yeah, that's another one that was like, wow, they've not really thought this through. I thought the action for MMA was like good, not great.
Good.
Certainly the best. It was better than David Mamet's like stupid ass red belt. Okay, you know, we can give it
and
that.
Did you know there were a lot of ex-fighters that played those roles that
yeah,
I didn't
you had,
know
you had, you had Rumble in there. You had Nate Marquardt. You had some other ones. But like the funny part, Zhukao was in there, Juan Carnero. But like the other part about it was like, you know, everyone gets redemption in the end. Right? Teacher gets redeemed because he starts to cheer. Kids become fans of their own teacher. The teacher gets redemption. Tommy surrenders to the demons that have held him back, both metaphorically and literally, BC, when he taps out in the main event. The dad proves that he wants to be a part of their life. Everybody gets to say, wow, at the end, didn't I do good? It's like, motherfucker, that is not how these broken lives go. Someone would have had to double-cross the other one, and they would still be a shithead, and you had to give it up on them, and blah, blah, blah. Like, no one comes out of this all. This movie just laundered everybody. It just made everybody okay.
I don't think it stained MMA, which is important, even
That's
though
fine.
It was, you know. And I do think that they were very ambitious. They were trying to make a Rocky movie. And I'll give them credit that they actually came pretty damn close. And once again, as you said, those performances from the two brothers to the dad, like, there were some top shelf performances put in. So, you know what? It was an entertaining watch. 7.1. There you go. Thank you, people. Thank you.
Listen, it went on too long, and it's fine if you want to say it's okay. But these people being like, it's the new Rocky. No, Creed is the new Rocky. Sorry, hate to tell you that. It's not the air. And that was the other part, too. It's like, oh, Fitzy's. It ain't Fitzy's anymore. I'm like, bitch, they are not putting MMA gyms where boxing gyms used to be. Like, I get the symbolism. Like, it's the new fight sport that everyone cares about. It's like, dude, that's, you got, the MMA gyms are in the suburbs. You know, they're not downtown fucking steel mill Pittsburgh. But okay, there you go. Fucking sucked. We fight our country's battles. Not we will. All right, very good. BC, had a long week. We should remind folks, we have one more segment to look at, but that Justin Gaethje interview. I believe we have one more of these. Are we going to play that now? And if so, I think it's where he reminds everyone of his mental state that he is not going to go to, if you guys want to.
Yeah, we should let this clip take us out, right, Luke?
We have to sign off and everything first. You want to do it when we sign? Gaff, do we want to do it when we sign out? Okay,
yeah,
very good. So with that in mind, okay, let's do all the lowers. If you want to follow us on social, we could put that up. You can check us out on Insta. You can check us out on Twitter, Morning Combat across all three, of course, with a K. thumbs up on the video, subscribe if you like this and you want a whole lot more, and why wouldn't you? MorningCombat@gmail.com. Submissions for Dead Wrong. You want to reach out to the show. You want to send me and Brian a bunch of money over PayPal. That's going to be the place to do it. MorningCombat@gmail.com. Also, BC.
I kind of look like Des Barry. I kind of look like Des Barry in this hat, right? Our super
a little
fans
bit. We have some beautiful merch. You're wearing it. I'm wearing it, as you can see here. Let's take a look. Very good. You can go to store.show.com. It's available right now. Appreciate that when everyone buys it, especially when you're overseas. And, of course, if you want to try Showtime, do it. Go to showtime.com right now. 30-day free trial. You like it, you can keep it. If not, you can go be a loser on your own time. BC, we have a very busy weekend. Plenty of coverage headed everyone's way. Catch us on CBS Sports HQ for before the fights, after the fights, tons of analysis coming your way.
Oh, yeah. And, you can expect a Morning Combat instant analysis from myself on the Lomachenko fight as well Saturday night. So be on the lookout at that early Sunday as well.
All right. And without further ado, this Justin Gaethje interview should be up very soon. To take us out, may all your gains be loyal. And here's another clip. Enjoy your weekend, folks.
Great chatting with you, sir.
All right, I promise you guys, I ain't going out like no bitch.
Neither will we.
We believe you, Justin. We believe you.
All right, later, boys.
Our kids have said to us since we've moved to Minnesota, we are far more active than we've ever been anywhere else we've ever lived.
Moving to Minnesota opened up a lot of doors for us.
Just this overall sense of community, of values that, you know, Minnesotans have.
It's a real accepting, loving community, especially with two young kids.
See why CNBC ranks Minnesota #4 best state to live and work. A great place to work, an even better place to live. ExploreMinnesota.com/live.